The following program is a commentary program. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of Dale Jackson, his guests, and callers. They do not represent the views of Cumulus Broadcasting, its management, or this station.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
It's live. It's local. It's the Dale Jackson Show on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN online at WVNN.com, and on your smartphone on iHeartRadio.
News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN News Time 8:08 here on your Monday morning. I'm Dale Jackson. And the phone numbers if you want to jump on board 1-866-494-WVNN 1-866-494-9866. We're going to talk Parker Griffith. We're going to talk Medicaid. We're going to talk about the death penalty, including Representative Mike Ball's knowledge about this death penalty case they're talking about specifically. In a Montgomery Advertiser trial, which I think, and I think Representative Mike Ball agrees, is a little bit misleading. But we'll talk about that. But before we do, I want to give the folks who have hung on, who want to talk about the Parker Griffith thing, Eric in Athens. Oh, before I jump to Eric, I read this, Philly Bama 1 on Twitter. So how was the surgery to have your lips removed from Dr. Griffith's keister? That's a new one. I'm kissing Parker Griffith's butt. There's a new one. Okay, fine. Eric Athens, you're on the Dale Jackson Show. What's going on?
Hey, Dale Jackson. How are you?
Pretty good.
I don't know about y'all, but this is what I heard when he was talking. This is the same kind of hate that Obama was preaching when he ran, right? Division, fear, you know, sexist, racist, all these things. This is the same exact thing Obama puts out. And he got elected through lies and misleading figures and quote-unquote facts, right?
Right.
You know, I'm just not drinking the Kool-Aid he's selling, so apparently I'm a racist, a sexist, and I want a whole bunch of people to die of cancer.
Yeah.
So I don't appreciate that crap, take that to the house.
Well, no, listen, that's what he's going to be running on. We saw this on some of the talking heads over the last few weeks. Now they're saying 10,000 to 14,000 people will die in these states if Medicaid's not expanded. And, you know, a lot of people will tell you, well, listen, if there's no doctors, there's no doctors. Throwing money at this is not going to solve this problem. It is a complete fallacy and a farce. Let's bring Representative Mike Ball on the program with us this morning. Representative Ball, good morning. How are you doing today?
Just wonderful. Just wonderful.
Well, we're glad to have you on the program. We're glad to have you here. Let's talk about Parker Griffith here for just a quick second. At this event he was holding, apparently at some lady's house up here in North Alabama, he said the typical liberal stuff, war on women, war on, war on the poor, war on blacks, war on Hispanics. He wanted to say war on gays and got caught up in that with some of the crowds and gays and all these things. You're running into this in the Alabama legislature too, that everything is a coordinated Koch brothers fueled war on something. Is this working its way from politics into policy as well, or is this solely a political thing that they play, and then behind the scenes Democrats are like, we're just trying to get elected?
Well, one of the things that's going on right now, Dr. Griffith is trying to mobilize his base. You know, there are some in that left-wing base that got mad at him when he switched parties, and so he's trying to jack them up. And it's Democratic primary season, so he's trying to jack them up while still posturing himself for the general election. And I know some of your listeners thought you were patronizing. I mean, I didn't get that. What, you were not particularly as antagonistic as you have been, but I think in the interest of good radio,
it's April. That's my response to that. It's April.
In the interest of good radio, you open up a dialogue, you get him to come on, you know, he comes on the radio, he gets his message out, you let the voters, let the people listen and decide. I don't think at the message that he's doing right now is particularly going to resonate with the people of Alabama. But, you know, I thought you did a pretty good interview.
Well, my thing with Griffith is me and him have a long-standing antagonistic relationship, and I'd like to be able to, as this campaign goes on, especially since I'm doing two shows now, be able to get him on to come on the program and say what he wants to say. I'm not going to hammer him on every little thing. When he gets outlandish, I'm obviously going to jump up like I normally do, but I want people to be able to hear what he has to say. I mean, look, here's what he said. He said, "I am a big government liberal." Okay, I am a big government liberal that wants to expand government, wants to spend more government money. He implied that this money was free to the state of Alabama with no consequences or cost. The audience picked up on that,
and right, and it really gets down to what's the purpose of having guests on this show. You know, I've gone on shows where the interviewer does all the talking and the interviewer has all the points that he wants to make. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, you could do that without me as a guest. What you really have to do, I mean, you know, it's not really even your responsibility to call every little thing out. You know, you got to give the listeners some credit for having some sense themselves.
Does Medicaid resonate across the state, the expansion of Medicaid? I know Bentley, I'm not going to say he's wavered on it because I don't think that's true. I think that it is something that has been just, he's been beat over the head with it over and over and over and over and over again. Is it something that resonates with the people? Do people come up to you and say this, that, or the other?
Not much. I mean, it resonates with some people. It resonates with people that, depending on where you're at on the political spectrum. It resonates for some people and against some people, and most people see both sides. And so, no, I mean, I think we knew 6 months ago when I incidentally was one of the early ones that predicted he was going to run for governor. If you remember,
right, you did. You were one of the first, and maybe that's just because nobody else was out there, and nobody else wanted to run. Nobody else was dumb enough to get in front of this Bentley.
It was like hustle. It was like hot potato.
You do it. No, I don't. You do it. So,
but
go ahead.
But we also knew early on that their issues would be expand, get that Medicaid money, expand Medicaid. And lottery, and I'm having a Rick Perry moment.
Medicaid, lottery, and I believe that his third thing was jobs, obviously.
We're all for jobs.
That's what I told him. I said, everyone's for jobs.
Oh, yeah, we're for jobs. And it really gets down to what's the best thing that the government can do to create jobs. The question is, do we want to create government-funded jobs? Or do we want the private sector to thrive and have economic activity that creates jobs? One of them requires freedom, and the other one requires restriction of freedom. So that's the debate about how do we create jobs.
Yeah, well, when we talk about these things and how you create jobs, there's those studies. UAB study, Troy study. He said there's been three done. One was a study of a study, and we'll talk to the Troy professor here later on, probably tomorrow, about that study and Parker Griffith's interpretation of it. But the jobs study, I mean, here's a billion jobs are going to be created. I mean, it's just, and the argument is, well, where are these doctors going to come from? Where are all these medical professionals going to come from? If they don't exist now, creating a bigger government program that spends a ton of money, what does that do?
Well, the big problem is, and I think the problem Dr. Bentley's very aware of, and Dr. Griffith should be, is that our Medicaid system is, we can't fund what we got. It's a mess. It is a total bureaucratic mess. As a matter of fact, Dr. Williamson, who is, if not the most competent director, manager in Montgomery, certainly one of them, and he'll be the first to tell you, this thing is a monstrosity, and it's difficult. So we need to do more of what is a mess, And it's not unique to Alabama that's a mess. I think it's a mess everywhere.
All right. I think that what the problem that we're going to run into is people are eventually going to say, how are we going to pay for this? Him saying, essentially, it's free money.
There's no such thing.
Well, it's laughable. But if you tell people when you're running for governor, hey, the federal government's going to bring all this money in. If we just let the government bring all this, everything's going to be fine. Could that work?
Well, it's going to be a battle between over the voters, and it's going to be a question of are there more voters in Alabama that want more free stuff, or are there more voters that want to have an opportunity to earn and keep what they have themselves? And that's the battle. That's the battle that's going on across the country.
Which do you think will be seen as? Which do you think Alabamians are?
Well, we got both. That's why there's an election.
Okay.
We got both, and Democrats have one general appeal, and Republicans have another appeal. I remember when my daughter Mandy, when she was in the first grade, and what's the difference between Republicans and Democrats? And maybe she oversimplified it, but her line, she'd say, is Republicans want to keep their own stuff, and Democrats want to get what everybody else has.
Okay. So, well, we'll continue this conversation. I also want to talk to you about a story out of the Montgomery Advertiser. I've been talking with Brian Lyman on Twitter about this. I asked him if he talked to you about this, about the story. He said no. I'm going to believe it.
He didn't know that.
Well, not only did he not know, it's not really a key part of the story, but
it's odd.
It's an odd part. We're going to talk about this. It's a story about Big Mama, the chair, the electric chair, and possibly bringing it back. And for a little color, Lyman mentions, you know, hey, this guy suffered, you know, when he died. We'll talk about what the guy actually did and how bad we should feel for him. Stay tuned. Live, local, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, News Time, 8:24 here on your Monday morning. Representative Mike Ball joins us at 8 o'clock every single Monday. We always appreciate that, Representative Ball. Thanks for being here.
Oh, good to be here.
Let's talk about this story out of the Montgomery Advertiser. It's about Yellow Mama, which is the electric chair. Before we get into the details, which we're going to have to do on the other side, I want to talk to you about the issue here. The issue here, as I understand it, you're down in the legislature, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. The issue here is the way we execute criminals in the state of Alabama now via lethal injection requires a drug which European companies have refused to sell for execution purposes, and American companies are now coming under attention from liberal activists and academics and students and all that, liberal activists essentially, for selling it. And it being used in order to sedate murderers before the lethal cocktail is given to them and they died. So what you guys in the legislature wanted to do, I don't know if you're for this or not, but I assume you are, but what the legislature wanted to do was to go out and basically shield the company and keep secret who you guys were getting the cocktail from. Now, I can understand journalists' argument where everything should be open and all these other things, but what it's done is it's made it impossible to carry out what the people have asked you to carry out. Are you for providing that level of secrecy to these companies so they will continue to provide the product?
Yes.
Now, what's the problem?
Well, here's the whole thing in a nutshell. You got some people that think that there are certain crimes that merit the death penalty, that are serious enough that those who commit those things, those actions, we as a society should say, this, you should pay for this with your life. Mm-hmm. And then there are those who think, no, government should never, ever, ever take a human life. And a lot of those, all life is equal. All life is, and the argument almost it's generally not a very objective argument, and so those people who are against the death penalty, use every method that they can have to make it difficult, if not impossible. They'll delay it, and a lot of folks, you know, when did away with electric chair, went to lethal injection, you know, then they try to find ways to delay it as best they can, and they feel like they're fighting for those lives of those people on death row, and then there are those on the other side, and which I'm one of them, that think there are certain circumstances and we should certainly have due process, and as it goes down the line, when the evidence is there that they committed some of these atrocious acts, and I know that I'm not the most objective person on this. I've been on two doggone many crime scenes. And
I want to talk about the crime scene mentioned in the story. It's a rape and murder of a mother of four. You were actually on that crime scene.
I was there.
And you know a little bit about the guy who they talked about. But before we'll get into that on the other side, there's a little bit more time. On this issue, though, the way it seems to be playing out is essentially much like Democrats seem and liberals seem to be doing with talk radio and other businesses. It's just by annoyance. And by, I don't know how else to say this, but by annoyance, essentially, they're able to shut down legal, functioning, legitimate forms of government or commerce or political speech. And yes, it's allowed, but again, it's just, it doesn't seem to be in line with how our system is supposed to work. We have laws that say we can do execution in the state of Alabama, so because they can't get those changed, they go after the company.
And the thing about the criminal justice system, and it's always been like this, and that's just the way it is. When you first start a case and you're at the crime scene, it's all about the victim. And your attention is on the victim. You learn as much as you. But once you make an arrest and once the appellate process starts, the farther away you get from the crime scene, the more it becomes about the perpetrator and less about the victim. And the victims get forgotten. But those of us who have spent a lot of time on crime scenes and around victims, you know, it's particularly law enforcement people, early in the process, you just can't get victims out of your mind, and it's hard to get a lot of sympathy for the people that you've devoted so much of your life to tracking down and bringing to justice.
All right. Well, I want to talk about this guy mentioned in this story. And Brian Lyman of the Montgomery Advertiser mentions him in this story, sort of as color, sure. You know, and to mention one of the problems they have with the chair. And I don't object to any of that. But when you came in here and started telling me about what this guy did, I have a problem with the mentally retarded classification in the story. Not that it's not how he was classified, but stay tuned. We'll be back. We'll talk about it.
It's live. It's local. It's the Dale Jackson Show on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Listen live online at WVNN.com and on iHeartRadio. Depend on it.
All right, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN News Time. It is 8:37 here on your Monday morning. We are speaking with Representative Mike Ball right now. He is joining us. We appreciate him coming on the program. We've been talking about this death penalty thing, and I'm not sure whether or not we'll find the death penalty working its way back into Alabama politics anytime soon. The session is over, and we'll have to wait until 2015 and see what the legislature looks like at that point. Before we get going, Representative Ball, before I let you talk about this case, can you tell me why it died? Why did this die? Why didn't this issue come up sooner?
It just this was just one of those sessions that wanted to get in and out. It just didn't make it, but had a lot of support. But you have to understand that the opposition was galvanized. It would have required a cloture. It wouldn't have been just a simple thing to got through. It would have been at the result of a fight, and it And there were just so many fights that you could have in a highly compressed session.
Okay. Well, when we talk about this, we'll talk about it a little bit more at length later. I want to talk about the way this story starts. Here's how it starts. It wasn't immediately clear the execution had gone wrong. All Stephen Ellis could see from the viewing room of Holman Correctional Facility's execution chamber was his client, Horace Duncans, twitching and jerking and being administered up to 2,000 volts of electricity. Almost 10 minutes past early on the morning of July 14th, 1989, two medical personnel examined Duncans, a mentally retarded man convicted of the 1980 rape and murder of Lynn McCurry, a 26-year-old mother of four. Minutes passed. Ellis, now an attorney in Vermont, said in an interview last week that the reality of the situation slowly dawned on those present. After an officer opened the door of the death chamber, reporters overheard him saying to the second officer, "I believe you got the jacks on wrong." Corrections officials later confirmed the wires had not been properly connected to the chair, despite the shock that appeared to have rendered Duncans unconscious. His heart was still beating. The disconnection required the switch to be thrown a second time. 10 minutes later, and 19 minutes after the execution began, Duncans was pronounced dead.
Did they say that Duncans said, "I believe you got the jack"?
No. Other correction officials. Okay. It's impossible to imagine how unbearably painful it was to experience that level of voltage with the level of voltage that was intended to be lethal, but wasn't. It's impossible that it wasn't painful. Well, cry me a frickin' river. I mean, this guy is a murderer of a mother of four, a 26-year-old. He murdered her, and then 9 years later, he's finally put to death. You know the details of this case. Walk us through. You were on the scene.
Yes, that was over 30 years ago. I started my law enforcement career. I was a midnight trooper out of Jefferson County from 78 to 82. Myron Massey, who was one of the first black officers, if not the first black officer in Warrior PD, He called me in the middle of the night when he got to the scene and asked me to come, and I was there on that scene when Lynn McCurry was drug out, and I remember knowing about Horace Duncan. Horace Duncan, he was on parole. As a matter of fact, and I might warn the list. I mean, I don't know if this could get graphic, because I'm just remembering as it goes. So, if you got children, they probably don't want to hear this. Horace Duncan had gotten out. He had been arrested for sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl with a piece of galvanized pipe. He was brutal. My understanding is that he was a drug dealer. By the way,
this guy was later found to be mentally retarded. So he was a brutal.
Didn't score well on tests.
But he was able to run a drug ring.
Well, and he is a sexual predator. There's no question. I didn't know anything but evil about him. Maybe his mama knows different, but I saw the fruits of what he did firsthand. He had
sexually abused someone already. It was out on probation for that. A 14-year-old girl was out on probation.
Well, not probation. The case was pending, and I don't remember the details, but he had been arrested for it and charged. But anyway, in the middle of the night, he went to the home of Lynn McCurry. There was some speculation that her husband might have owed him some money. And him and another guy went out there. From all indications, Duncan was the leader. The other guy was the follower. And Duncan went to Lynn McCurry's house. These people were dirt poor. They lived in a little shack there in the woods off the road.
With four kids.
They had four little kids. And the husband, what he did, he caught chickens in the middle of the night for those chicken houses and which is just nasty menial work, and they load them on the truck to haul the chickens off from the chicken house.
Right.
And so while the husband was out catching chickens all night, Horace Duncan comes in the middle of the night to their house while Lynn McCurry was there with their four little preschool kids. They were like little stair steps. I never will forget those squalling, screaming kids. He comes there and he knocks on the door. He gets, he, uh, uh, Lynn McCurry comes to the door, and he drags her out and tied her to a tree, and he sexually assaulted her.
He wasn't alone.
No, he was with another guy. Him and another guy tied her to a tree, but all indications are he was the one that with the knife that tortured her and carved her up and sexually assaulted her. I remember her seeing her body tied to the tree with blood on that white dress, white nightgown that she wore that night. And I remember those squalling little kids on that porch. And so it was, you know, and it's ironic. Myron Massey later transferred to, he was a great police officer and a close, very, very close friend. It's a very emotional experience working that, you know, you try to keep your objectivity, you know, those things stay with you forever when you have those kind of experiences. And Myron was such a good officer. And what struck me is so odd. Myron later transferred to Fairfield PD, and in the middle of the night he stopped a stolen car and he was killed in the line of duty. Horace Duncan outlived Myron Massey by several years.
Now, when they found him mentally retarded, I mean, obviously you were investigating this case.
I was just a patrol guy that helped secure the scene. I think Lynn Moore with the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department was the investigator.
Okay, but the finding of this guy as retarded, does that ring true? I mean, retarded in the sense where he was unable. I mean, when I hear retarded, it seems to me like when we hear about law enforcement and defense attorneys getting someone declared retarded, it's always as a way to essentially, I mean,
create sympathy.
Create sympathy.
Right. Create defense. And the farther away you get from the crime scene, the easier it is to create sympathy. And you know, I'm not normally a vengeful person. But you know, we as a society, there are certain things that certain acts. It has nothing to do with, I can't judge Horace Duncan's soul. I can look at his acts, and I can say that there's certain acts that people do that we as a society should reserve the worst penalty possible. So
this guy doesn't get your sympathy that he got zapped twice.
Well, I kind of think. A little karma came around, didn't it?
Yeah, and so I read the story, and you were talking to me afterwards about the guy. He was head of a drug ring. He was part of multiple people. He was out there. This wasn't, you know, when I hear he was mentally retarded, you know what I think? I think of Mice and Men. That's what I think about.
Kid with Down syndrome at Partlow that we're going to grab up off the street and execute.
Yeah.
No, that's not what this is. This is somebody that was a sexual predator that took four little children's mother away, and by all indications, Lynn McCurry was a good mother.
Right.
You know, when you learn about these, and law enforcement people, they get to know the victims and they have these personal relations, and you can't help but sympathize and understand with them. And it was a cruel, heinous act, and Horace Duncan has become the anti-death penalty poster boy for why we should not have the death penalty because it's so cruel. And every time his name comes up, then I would like for these crime scenes to get out of my head. But every time it comes up, it conjures that stuff back up. And I know I'm not the most objective person in the world, but nobody's objective. We are all colored by our personal experience.
And it's easy, like you said, once you're away from it, to say, oh, my God, this is so horrible. Anyway, if you opened up your Montgomery Advertiser today and you heard that a retarded man was executed, you read it very differently than how it actually was.
It doesn't look anything like it looks like in Mike Ball's mind.
Okay, that's what I wanted to get to. Okay, there we go. That's exactly what I wanted to get to. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll continue more with Representative Mike Ball. 1-866-494-WVNN. 1-866-494-9866. It's the Dale Jackson Show, live and local, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it. Hey, folks, Dale Jackson here for my friends at the Sleep Number store. Folks, I love my Sleep Number bed, and you would love it, too. My Sleep Number is a 45, and here's the greatest thing about it. It contours to my body. That's right, my body. I'm able to find the perfect night's sleep because I have a Sleep Number bed. Now, maybe you thought, I can't afford a Sleep Number bed. Well, listen, Dale Jackson's here to tell you, not only can you afford a Sleep Number bed, you can't afford to have another restless night's sleep. So introducing the all-new Sleep Number Classic Series featuring their latest innovations, comfortably priced. The Sleep Number bed uses air to support and cushion your entire body. Exclusive dual air technology makes it the perfect bed for couples, and you can adjust each side to your ideal level of firmness, your Sleep Number setting. Contours to your neck, your shoulders, your back, and your hips for a more appropriate spinal alignment, and it's clinically proven to relieve back pain and improve sleep quality. And remember, you and your spouse each get your own Sleep Number setting. So hurry in to a Sleep Number store where queen mattresses start at just $6.99, and right now save $300 on the all-new C4 queen mattress set. If you need to know better sleep, you need to find your Sleep Number setting today, and you can only do that at a Sleep Number store near you, Parkway Place Mall, upstairs, next to Dillard's. And when you go see my friends at the Sleep Number store, make sure you tell them Dale Jackson sent you.
This segment of the Dale Jackson Show is brought to you by our friends at First Family Mortgage. Let First Family Mortgage help you with your house by calling Conrad today at 425-0105.
All right, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN News Time, 8:53 here on your Monday morning. State Representative Mike Ball in the studio with us. We're talking maybe a little more about law enforcement stuff this morning than politics, and that's okay. We always appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. You know the story of Reuben Hurricane Carter, Representative Ball?
There was a movie about him.
Yeah. Turns out the movie is complete BS. And there's a scene in that movie, this guy just died, and you're hearing wrongfully convicted murder. In the movie, there's a scene where he beats the crap out of this guy, and the judges are so racist, they reward the fight to the white guy. Well, the white guy in that scene sued the movie makers, got a settlement out of it, because in reality, the white guy beat the crap out of it. There's more to it, too. I just want to share this other part to you. And this is from an article from a few years ago. When it comes to the murders, there was enough evidence to convict him twice, both times set aside by procedural errors by the prosecutors. Carter failed the lie detector test miserably, and when he was given a chance to retake it after being in prison for a while, he refused. At his second trial, several witnesses who had provided Carter's alibi admitted they lied and had been asked to lie. But what about the evidence that proved his innocence? Well, there was none. The judge was forced to throw out the conviction based on the prosecution failing to turn over some evidence, and thus didn't give Carter a fair trial. The prosecution could have chosen to retry the case from scratch to convict Carter a third time, but they decided it wasn't worth doing so since 22 years had passed and all the people involved were either dead or ridiculously old. So the story of this corruption where this guy fought and got it turned over is a little bit different than it's told.
Well, and it usually is. And you know, from having that career in ABI and in law enforcement, so many times I'll see the story that comes out over time, and there are political agendas, and most reporters, they try to get it out, but everybody looks through their eyes, just like I'm standing here, and I'm looking through my eyes, and my perspective is very different. You know, and as somebody that's been in the criminal justice system, you know, I'm not capable of judging people's hearts and who's good and who's bad. You know, all we can do is we can see actions. I think that's the Lord's purview, and I stay out of that. But there are certain actions that no matter what was in the guy's heart or what the person's heart is now, there are certain actions that we as a society just have to say what the appropriate response is. And the murder of Lynn McCurry, I believe, you know, and so many times it's not just Lynn McCurry, but her kids saw their mama drug out in the middle of the night, and all four of them, they have to live with it forever. And it's often children that suffer the consequences of this. And you know, I think that act, I don't see where there's anything wrong with the act that Horace Duncan did, meriting the death penalty, meriting the electric chair twice.
Right. And the fact is, he got it. He got what he deserved. You know what? Tough. I wish they would have connected it and killed him the first time. But you know what the funny thing is? Had they just would have found somebody else.
Well, and...
And they would have just found some other poor sap victim to make an issue out of it, and that's what they would have done.
And you know, a lot of people, they get to the point where they can forgive anything or excuse anything. And you know, I'm not a person that holds grudges, and I do the bless their heart and stuff a lot. But there are some things that, you know, we should not lose our sense of outrage. There are some things that should outrage us, that should cause outrage within us. Those are the kind of things that outrage, make my blood boil and outrage, you know, and when you're investigating, you have to keep that in control. But I'm not an investigator anymore, so I can let that stuff go. Some people get outraged over other things. And I reserve that kind of outrage for the Horace Duncans of this world.
Well, and you have the ability, I guess, to go down to the legislature. What would you do if you had your say? Because obviously something's going to have to change. Either the people who make the drug that allows for lethal injection are going to have to be given some immunity to being seen and to prosecution and things like that. And that was a problem Cam Ward had with the bill, I think, and he'd like to see it done a little bit better. Or they're going to have to go back to the yellow mama electric chair. What do you want to see done? What will you do?
I want to make sure I do support the efforts to streamline the process. That doesn't mean take any of the checks and balances out. We want to be sure of our evidence, and we'll figure.
Would you be okay with the electric chair coming back?
Yeah.
Oh, and you're okay with lethal injection?
As long as, you know, we don't need to take steps to do away with the checks and balance. We want to make sure of our evidence.
There we go, Representative Mike.
Test the evidence, and then, you know, punishment should be swift, sure, and consistent.
There we go. State Representative Mike Ball, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning. We'll definitely talk to you soon. Stay tuned. More coming up here on WVNN. Chris Plant, he's next. I'll be on WAPI at 10. You can check us out on the API app. I'll be there. Go download the VNN app as well. See ya.
Power of God has freed us.